You're listening to Me and Paranormal You with your host, Ryan Singer. It's more fun to believe.
Third year bonus.
And we're off and running to the radio races. This is like, I guess, old school radio in many respects. It's got that vibe. It's got that old school radio situation happening. Radio obviously was the predecessor to podcasting. Hat tip to, you know, specifically Art Bell. I mean, come on. Get out of town. Are you kidding me? Anybody ever do strange radio paranormal broadcasting as well as the great, the late, the incomparable Art Bell? We love you, Art. We miss you. We've got hours of your voice left behind. So thank you for leaving that behind. It's never a bad time to thank Art Bell from coast to coast. Art Bell, the legend. Anyway, thank you for listening to another 30-year bonus of Me and Paranormal You. This is your buddy Ryan Singer. I am on the precipice of great changes that I'm very excited about. There's projects happening. There's things happening. Crystallize is getting so darn close. I know we've been talking about it for a while, but these things take time, and we've been trying to build anticipation, build excitement, and I think we're doing a successful job of that. Now, we're getting super, super close. I'm headed back to Ohio for a little while, just a tiny, tiny small window of time to prepare and for the launch, to be working side by side with my cousins who have invested so much of their time and money and energy into making this vision a reality. So we're all very, very excited about that. If you haven't had a chance yet, please sign up at crystallize.app/early access, or you can just go to crystallize.app and there's a Get Early Access tab on there. We've got a very exciting announcement that's coming later this week. I believe it's coming later this week if you're listening to this in real time. So we're getting super, super jazzed. So, and I'm getting super, super, super excited. Can I say super any more times? I mean, there's so many things to do in this life, and especially when juxtaposed against the idea of the inevitable death that we all face. And I am hyper obsessed with death and the idea of what death even is. And after so many close friends of mine recommended watching the series Surviving Death, which is on Netflix, I finally started diving into it, finally found some time to dive into it. And it's just so fucking good. It's just good. I think there's only 6 episodes, I believe. Anyway, if you haven't had a chance to get going on that, I mean, watch the first episode and tell me you don't want to watch the rest of them. I mean, it's just, you know, when you think about the idea of death and reincarnation, and is there something beyond? And that's the big thing for ghosts, right? And you know, what is consciousness? And is it lingering? Is it stuck? Is it trapped? Is it here on purpose out of its own free will or its own volition? I mean, these are all questions we don't necessarily have answers to. People have many experiences that tell them what they know to be true. And this is one of the big things about being an experiencer of the paranormal. Can you ever truly count on someone who hasn't experienced anything to fully believe you? And it's a difficult question because it's a difficult question to ask oneself, because the answer might not be what we want it to be. This is a question that's raised when it comes to near-death experiences as well. And if you watch the first episode of Surviving Death, you'll be able to understand, you know, like what inspired me to even be thinking about this in a way. But when applied to our own paranormal experiences, it becomes the question of, how can we effectively communicate these experiences to people to establish credibility in the story? And, you know, because we have to cut through so much bias and so much noise, right, that the rest of the world has spun, has built, has amplified when it comes to this is real, this is not real, this is sanity, this is insanity. Which side do you fall on? When in fact, you know, that liminal space in the middle is much more likely where all of reality, everything that we experience, resides in that liminal space, which is, you know, probably where I fall, like right now, thinking about like, what's the truth of reality? I think it's as much as we claw and grasp for wanting to know the definitive and wanting to know the truth and wanting to know the facts, you know, there's probably no such thing. Now, when it comes to these experiences and what is actually real, it's a difficult thing to think about because, you know, I associate facts and truth with stability and with understanding and comfort and ease and, you know, peace of mind. And the unknown leads to anxiety and questions and instability in many ways. So, when we have an experience of the paranormal nature, the supernatural, the otherworldly, the mystical, how can we effectively communicate these experiences to people who have none of that experience to make them at least get close to believing? And there's a big difference between someone believing your experience and someone believing that you think you experienced it. Because that leaves a big window of opportunity for the person not to believe, right? It's easy to get out that window because there's a huge difference between believing someone and believing that they believe whatever it is they're telling you. Basically, that's maybe a nuanced way of saying I will not commit to saying I believe this thing was real, that this happened, you know, outside of the person telling it. Because there's two layers here. There's the person's experience, and then there's the thing that they experienced existing outside of that person, right? So if someone tells you, like me, that they had an experience in a place like Florida, or a creature or something of some kind, scared practically the life out of them. It's one thing to believe me that I experienced something. And I think if you listen to this program, you know that I 100% believed I know I experienced that. Now there's a difference between that and believing that there is something out there that created this noise, this experience. And I happen to be there to hear it and to experience it. We are separate from one another, even though all things are connected and all that. Yeah, sure. But that's the difference. Believing that I believe I experienced it, which means that, you know, maybe I didn't. Maybe I'm a little bit crazy, right? Or hallucinating or something like that. And then believing that there's something out there that actively created the experience onto me, within me, to me, at me. Make sense? I think so. So that's the difference. How do we get people from believing in us to believing in the thing? That's a big leap, even though it's a small step. Big leap, small step. So, the loneliness, the isolation, I don't want to say marginalized necessarily, but I do think there was a marginalization of people who were having paranormal experiences for many, many years. Now, you know, being classified as crazy or as kooks or as, you know, mentally ill, drug addicts, whatever, right? Or seeking attention, things like that. So, how do we break through that isolation? Because truth be told, it can be very lonely. It can be very, very isolating and lonely when and if you feel like no one understands your story. And worse, if no one believes your story. So, how do we get through that? Well, we connect with other people who have had experiences. I'm certain that is probably the most effective way. And I think that's what this podcast has been about. The Mindcast from the beginning has been about looking for answers, looking for other people who have had experiences in the same vein, the unexplainable, the paranormal. Can we find other people? Can we locate those who may be experiencing the same things, may be suffering in isolation, in loneliness? And can we connect? And just from the feedback I've gotten over the years, I do know that a lot of people have reached out and said that they appreciate not feeling so alone and not feeling like they're crazy once they hear other people's stories. There's commonalities there. And so in that way, this has been a huge success over the years. This is not me saying I'm signing off. This is, you know, just me taking a moment to reflect on some things. The show will continue indefinitely, as far as I know. So, how do we actively build that so it's even more so than it is now? And what I mean is this connection and this community, this togetherness, this feeling of comfort that can come with knowing that we aren't insane. We aren't hallucinating. In fact, there are many, many truths to the reality around us and not just one. You know, that is the ultimate question. And that's the journey and that's the challenge that continues on for all of us who are experiencers, believers, etc. I guess it's kind of sad in some ways, knowing that a lot of people who will never have an experience of a paranormal just won't be able to fully believe. And I mean, like, both feet in, jumping in the water, right? And that's not to say that there are not people who do believe fully, who have never experienced something paranormal, because there are. But those people are fewer and far between than those who are willing to support but not willing to go all the way in their belief. Now, it's not right or wrong. I want to make clear that I don't believe it's a right or wrong issue. Would I be a both feet all the way in kind of person if I haven't had experiences? I don't know the answer to that, right? Because even as someone who has experienced, you know, multiple paranormal things, had plenty of evidence thrown in my face and thrown into my ears, there's still times where I'm doubtful. And I mean, I don't know. I'd say I'm a true believer. Now, just because you're a true believer doesn't mean you don't ebb and flow and have scales or, you know, like a chart. Sometimes you're high on the chart, sometimes you're low on the chart, etc. So there is something to be said about allowing for this, right? We have to make space for space in our beliefs. And what I mean by that is we have to allow ourselves to ebb and flow, up and down, side to side, within, without. And it's difficult, but if we can reserve our self-judgment, you know, for moments and times where maybe it's more appropriate and, you know, justified, you know, about like, oh, should I eat the second bag of party-sized M&Ms? Or should I be, you know what, this is not good, you shouldn't be doing this. Okay, that self-judgment is fine. I will allow that self-judgment because you're right. I don't need to eat a second bag of party-sized M&Ms, even if they are on sale at the old at the local Ralph's. I don't need that much sugar clogging up my pineal gland over here. Do you understand? Okay, so we can use self-judgment for those kinds of situations. But when it comes to, you know, being critical of self or doubting self, that's going to happen, and we just have to accept that. And why not embrace it? If it's inevitable, why not just embrace, you know, the nuance and the differing levels of the human experience, of the mind, of the psyche, of our thoughts and our emotions, instead of thinking, oh, I should never be this way because I'm a true believer. I've experienced too much to ever have any kind of doubt. It's like, come on, just take a break, take a breath, take a chill pill. Everything's going to be okay. This is a very short life. This is a very short physical form that we have. And I forget that constantly. Then luckily I'm reminded. But then even in those situations, it's like, what am I even doing here, man? Right? What am I even doing here? What's it all about? What am I working towards? What kind of impression, what kind of imprint am I working to make? And, you know, what am I even doing here? And do I not, if I believe in reincarnation, which I do I not want to set myself up for success next go round? Of course I do. Now, if I can learn a bunch of lessons in this particular life and I can apply these lessons to making the improvements that I need in my life, which are countless, right? Don't I have a better chance of not having to learn these lessons and having a more, I don't know, enlightened, beautiful, potentially better, quote unquote, better, I hate to use that word, life the next go around. And I think I do. So why not? You know, think of it as someone who's, this is the visual image I have as I'm thinking about it. All of our lifetimes are a long cave. And maybe it's because I just rewatched Lord of the Rings not too long ago, the first three. Think of all of your lifetimes and your manifestations in physical human form as a long cave. And all of the lessons and trappings that keep us from moving forward and ascending and transcending and evolving are these individual strings of spider web. You're right. And when we first start out, it's almost impossible to take a step forward through this cave because the spider web is so thick. But as we go, we shed more and more of the web, more of the trappings, as we learn more and more lessons. And every once in a while, we might fall backwards, right? And, you know, have to shed some of the same web all over again. But slowly but surely, we keep moving forward. We keep removing the spider webs that are holding us back. And eventually, we are free from all of the sticky web that is preventing our spirit, our soul, our whatever, our consciousness from reaching that highest level and emerging from that cave and seeing that there's a giant, beautiful, wonderful spring of water that's warm with the sunshine and a waterfall waiting for us to dive in and truly be cleansed. And even though we don't need to be cleansed because we have done the work to cleanse ourselves. Now, I purposefully am choosing the water visual here because, yeah, as you know, I'm reading The Death of Forever by Daryl Rainey, and it's a very thick book. And what's interesting is the water motif, and he's talking about, is it, you know, whether it's the fall of man, the story of Eden, or, you know, it's talking about like primordial darkness, how there's, you know, the myths and the folklore of the human beings during the quote-unquote dreaming period. This was before, like, written history and all this stuff, right? That's what the dreaming period is, when linear time was not yet in existence in the mind of the human being. Water is there. And all of these creation stories from all these human cultures that were disconnected from one another by great expanses of distance and land and water, great distance, no connection whatsoever, at least in the physical form, even though, you know, over here at the show, we believe that we're all connected and we always have been. And I think this proves it, that there's always water, right? There's usually water in this darkness. And it goes back to, Rainey is asking, you know, as other people have, is this connected to being in the womb? The darkness, the water, right? Because we're in the liquid inside the uterus, intrauterine experience. How it's darkness, it's liquid. Everything we need is provided for us. It's warmth, it's comfort, it's ease, it's bliss, right? Sound familiar? Sounds kind of like heaven, right? So when we emerge from the intrauterine experience into being a born child, it's a painful, painful process. Scientists will say, doctors will say, it's the most painful thing you'll ever experience, is being birthed into this physical world as the muscles of the uterine wall contract and push our bodies out of this cave into the lightness, into the sunlight, into the world, right, where we have to take our first breath into our lungs, even though we've never done that before. It's a very alien experience, being born. So is there, why do these ancient folk, ancient myths and stories of creation, they all tie into this? And is it because of the archetypes? Is it because we all have memories of being born and even before we were born? And these memories, whether we realize it or not, are embedded in our brain. And these archetypes of water and of darkness and of warmth and of comfort and of bliss and being taken care of are there. And we resonate with them deeply when we hear these stories, right? Or, you know, is that the reason? Or is it because they're there? These are all fascinating ideas brought up in this book, right? So when you have the idea of water, you know, and then you have the Great Flood. Right? So there's water again coming up. And it, you know, is it just this powerful archetype that's in the human mind, right? And that's why we resonate with it. Or do we resonate with it because of its truth? And then you take into consideration near-death experiences. People who are, quote unquote, going to the other side. Now they're going towards light. Oftentimes you'll hear about going towards light as opposed to darkness. But they'll talk about warmth, feeling comforted, an overwhelming sense of love, and everything's going to be okay. These are also things, themes that pop up, you know, in most near-death experiences. So the building of the archetypes of the human mind, I do believe in the collective consciousness and that, you know, generational trauma has been proven scientifically. So all these things from the past, every lifetime that has been lived by our ancestors collectively or individually in our family trees, they are building the foundation of the things we experience now. So not only are ghosts real, but the ghosts of every human being that has ever lived has built our entire experience of reality, our perception of what we know to be life. Life is built on the backs of ghosts. Is it not? But then it made me start wondering, if being born is the most painful and the most jarring thing that we ever experienced in our entire lives, being pushed through, I wonder, as a C-section baby, I was not pushed through. So what does that mean for my experience, and what does it mean for my tolerance of pain? If all those who were born naturally have experienced the most painful thing they'll ever experience in life, do they have a higher tolerance for pain, or does it have the opposite effect? And for those of us that were C-section babies who have perfectly shaped heads, maybe our heads aren't supposed to be perfectly shaped, but what does that mean for our tolerance of pain, for our understanding of pain? Is there something we're missing? Or is there something just different about it? Or does it really have that much of an effect at all? I don't know the answer, but I feel like there might be. It's definitely an interesting thought to run around the brain. And the idea, too, that it's going to happen again and again and again. Through this the cycle of life, right? And human beings are born over and over and over again, and my DNA has been passed on for so many times, so therefore I will be born again countless times, seemingly, because my DNA is going to move on, at least in physical form. Reincarnation has been part of everything, whether we use those words or not. I mean, even think about, you know, Jesus. The second coming of Jesus. What is that if not just being born again? Christians talk about being born again. That is reincarnation. Reincarnation is everything except with different names. Now, people will be like, I don't believe in reincarnation. Well, yeah, you probably do. You just don't realize it. You just call it something else. Reincarnation doesn't specifically have to be such a narrow definition. Reincarnation is everything. A tree, you might even argue, is reincarnated every spring, only to die every winter. Even though someone might say, well, the tree doesn't die. Well, yeah, but it's renewed. And Rainey talks about, like, you know, the prefix R-E, re, rebirth, reincarnation. Something interesting that I never thought of before is the foundation of the human integration of death into our reality. The foundational tool, our coping mechanism, whatever it might be, religion. It's built into it. This idea of reincarnation, incarnating again, going back, going through it again and again and again, it's built into the word religion. Now, religion. Now, some people might say these are just words that were just, you know, used. They don't necessarily mean anything. But our words mean so much, because our words are verbal and physical representations of our thoughts, of our beliefs, of our spirit. Right, of our essence, of our being. These are the words that were born from this thing that is all. So yes, they're just words, but guess what, man? They're a lot more than words, okay? They are the magical creations that we have manifested from seemingly nothing. And that nothingness is the invisibleness of our thoughts and our feelings and our emotions, our hopes, our desires, our wants, our fears. Religion is that representative word. Religion. Reincarnation. The cycle of all, from dark to light, from dark to light, from fall to spring. Do we see how this is all connected? Our lives are built on the backs of ghosts. So when people say ghosts aren't real, I say, then life isn't real. And they'd say, but life is real. And I'd say, prove it. And they'd say, well, here's some things that I can lay out for you that prove life is real. And then I could say, well, this is one person's experience, right? And this is not an exercise in just trying to be like, well, then you could say anything is, nothing is real. And, you know, you could use this argument to be like, just prove, try to say nothing matters and nothing is real. And that's not what I'm trying to do here. Because, I mean, maybe everything matters, right? Maybe that's the catch. Maybe even sitting down to record this in a mostly empty room where I've spent almost the last 10 years of my life, and well, I've spent more time in this room in the last year than I probably have in the 9 years before it, because of the pandemic. I have never spent so much time in this room as I have this past year, and which I think is probably the experience of most of you. Now, considering I have roommates, it's a four-bedroom place. Most of us, you know, we would, you know, in an effort to try to be safe, we've mostly been spending time in our rooms. The common area hasn't even been used that much. So, knowing all of this, knowing that everything may matter, it just might count towards something, then sure, maybe this podcast does matter. Even if on the surface it might not seem like it does that much in the moment. Who knows? Who knows? Maybe it's building towards something else. I do feel like everything I've done since the beginning of the program has built towards where we are now. And I don't know where it goes from here, and I don't know what that even means. All I do know is that life is exciting, and it's very, very short. And I'll get caught up on things. You know, I get caught up on fears, insecurities, anxieties. I go on trips. You know, I trip out on something. You know, I get obsessed with something else. You know, all these things. I get caught up in some bullshit that doesn't matter at all in the big scheme of things. Zoom out, sit in your lazy boy chair outside the Milky Way galaxy. Look down on how tiny and insequential all this stuff is, and it becomes so much more beautiful to me. It's all good stuff. So, religion, rebirth, restart, reincarnation, death, life, light, dark. Is it coincidental? I'm just now realizing this. Life, light, death, dark. Is it coincidental that they line up like that? It's just a coincidence that both life and light start with L and death and dark start with D. Is it a coincidence? Is it really? Words matter. They are the manifestation of meaning. The representation of thought, without which we would not have in-depth communication and the way we have it now, the way we can even be. Here's evidence that this shit isn't just coincidental. The fact that podcasting even exists, that radio even exists, that books even exist. Now, granted, there are so many different languages out in the world. I can't remember how many. I know there's over 300, probably, for sure, if not 3,000. I don't know the numbers on that. I'm guessing, but every language, I would argue, probably has these happy coincidences, right? These quote-unquote happy coincidences inside of them. There's no mistake in that. Light, life, death, dark. Religion, reincarnation, rebirth. It just all kind of blows my mind, you know, the more I think about it all. And resurrection, that's another thing. Let me read a little excerpt from The Death of Forever here. I believe it's chapter 5. Daryl Rainey. Thus, resurrection and reincarnation have been successful in gaining adherence because they correspond deeply with the way our brains work. And in an important sense, the rebirth of the self is a memory, not a prediction. By the time we die, our mind clocks will have recorded, on average, about 27,000 successive rebirths. This kind of calculation becomes more compelling if we extend it to cover not just the course of a human life, but the course of life on Earth. The mind clock carries a memory of approximately 14,000 billion day-night cycles. That's what we're talking about here when it comes to this like rebirth. It's from day to night, from day to night, from the sun going down to the sun rising. Day-night cycles, the number of times the Earth has turned on its axis since life began. No single feature of life's environment has impressed itself more strongly on the basic character of biological systems than this repetitive process, which has synchronized outer and inner time. Indeed, as I indicated in the previous chapter, our very sense of time is, I believe, a part product of this profound imprinting. Environmental cycles of day and month and year have become internalized in the workings of the human brain. The environmental clocks have become neural clocks. It is hardly surprising, then, that primitive man, in his quest to find order in the world around him, has reversed this process, externalizing these cycles, basing his religions on the rhythms of the earth because they resonated so comfortingly with the rhythms of his mind. At the risk of overkill, let me repeat that the human experience was and is dark night and is followed by light day. Long periods of darkness, winter months, are followed by long periods of light, summer months. This very chemical and electrical patterns of our brains reflect and reinforce this oscillatory character of nature. Hence, inevitably, death has become identified with sleep, to be followed, as our most basic experience proves, by awakening. I could cite thousands of examples from the traditions of many cultures, but a few familiar quotes show how profoundly this link between death and sleep influences us. Jerome Bell writes, "I gaze on him and say, he is not dead, but sleeps. And soon he will arise and take me by the hand. I know he will awake and smile on me as he did yesterday." William Shakespeare in Hamlet, "To sleep, perchance to dream, aye, there's the rub, for in that sleep of death what dreams may come when we have shuffled off this mortal coil." Corinthians 15:20, resurrection to come in the first fruits of those who have fallen asleep. Jerome Bell, Shakespeare, the Bible. Who is it, Peter who wrote Corinthians? I can't remember. My memory's a little rusty on that. If you look at the, I don't want to say holographic nature, because I don't want, but I'm going to say it. If you look at the holographic nature of what we just laid out here, and the hologram contains all the information of the whole in the smallest part of itself. So, if you look at the smallest part of what we're talking about here, and then how it expands out and kind of plays itself out over the big, from the micro to the macro. You know, whether it's the day, the night, right? The sun goes down, and then it awakens. The sun rises from its sleep. Okay, maybe we'll say that's the micro version. Then you expand that out a little bit. And then you've got the seasons, right? The seasons go from over a longer period of time, from light to dark, back to light to dark. So it's interesting, you know, and even the human body, one might argue, goes from light to dark to light again, to dark again, from dark in the intrauterine experience to the light of being alive, to the darkness of dying, to the lightness of the afterlife, to the darkness of being in the uterus again, to the light of being born again. And this is with the assumption of reincarnation, right? Which to me is the right assumption to make. And even if you don't believe in the idea that your personality, your consciousness will be reincarnated, you cannot deny that your DNA shall be, as long as someone in your lineage somewhere is procreating and having a child. And I don't know, what about all the DNA that you've shed over the course of your life through loose skin or hair or whatever else? I mean, it goes into the earth somehow. Does it get integrated into the earth? It's all the same ball of clay, right? It just takes different forms, but it all ends up being it all ends up going back into the ball of clay. It doesn't matter how it was formed. There's really nowhere else it's gone. It all comes back to the ball of clay. Life built on the backs of ghosts. I think that's what I'll probably name this one. Just so I remember that phrase. I liked it. I liked it. Anyway, I think that's going to wrap it up for today. So I hope you're doing well. I will be traveling across the country very, very soon. I'm not sure what the scheduling of, or the release schedule of episodes is going to be here in the next week and a half or so. I got a lot going on. As you'll see, this Friday, I believe we're going to be making a big announcement for the app. And then also, I'm moving out of my apartment. I don't have a new apartment I'm moving into quite yet, but that will happen sometime later. Excuse me. Lots of great stuff happening. People are getting vaccinated. The world is slowly but surely beginning to open up. Hopefully I will be vaccinated at some point soon and I can start performing again very soon by the end of the summer, I hope, if not sooner. I'll be doing live shows is my hope. Get back to work, you know, start working again. That'd be amazing. I really, really look forward to it. The plan is to try to really bust my hump and get a special filmed before the end of the year. So really hoping to make that happen. Well, stop saying if and hope. We're going to make it happen. We were planning on doing it right before everything shut down. We were planning on doing it last year, but, you know, obvious things change that. And you know, it must have been what was meant to happen because it happened. Anyway, crystallize.app/early access, or just go to crystallize.app. Get on the waiting list today. You can get free premium access. The app will be free. There will be a free version of the app on Google and or on Android and iPhone. But there's also the premium version, which will have unlimited personal collection, unlimited snaps to identify crystals. Upon launch, we will be able to identify about 100 crystals. So not every crystal in our database will be identifiable, but that takes time, a lot of effort and money to train crystals and to find all these photos and to make sure the brain is working properly. We want this app to work. We don't want people to download it and be like, this thing sucks and never use it again. We are making an app that works. And so this takes time and it takes a lot of effort. And that's why we've been slow and steady on the build. Because we want to make sure we're putting a quality product on the market. Not to mention, you know, connecting you with all the people and, you know, the retailers and creators and people that are prioritizing ethically sourced crystals and the like. Because that's the future of the industry. Some people are going to be a little slower to that than others, but that is the future. And we're going to be providing resources for crystal lovers so they can tap into that. Anyway, you can follow on Instagram at Crystallize App. You can follow me at Rai Singh on Twitter and Instagram. Thank you to the patrons, patreon.com. Guess what? Just got my new webcam in the mail today. Going to be amping up video production very, very soon. I'm looking forward to it, along with a weekly show that will be available to everyone, not just patrons. Moving forward, that's going to be like questions and answers. And, you know, every once in a while, maybe some guests will pop on. But yeah, we're going to be doing some video content. And yeah, looking forward to it. Things are amping up. Looking forward to it. Summer's coming. Spring is on its way. Oh. You know, I love when it heats up. Love it. It's like 50 degrees and raining here in Los Angeles, which is cold. Oh, how am I going to handle the Midwest if I'm thinking 50 degrees is cold? Oh. It's weakened me, living here for a decade. It's weakened me when it comes to my experience of temperature. And I'm not ashamed to admit it. I love living out here. It's fucking awesome. But ooh, going back to the cold is brutality. Anyway, I love you. I hope you love yourself. I'm going to be seeing you at live shows at some point very, very soon. And by very, very soon, I mean hopefully in the next few months. So we'll see how that goes. In the meantime, take care of yourself. Love yourself. You know, if you can't count on love from yourself, I mean, who else can you count on it from? It's time to love yourself. Get into it. Hope you're safe. Hope you're doing okay. Hang in there. And if I don't see you soon, I'll see you at the watering hole on the astral plane.